Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Who ordered the code red? Of trading Kenny Pickett, Jeremy Fowler joins us right now. ESPN. Now, there's plenty of other things we need to get into. He's on the fan hotline. Jeremy, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
From the people you talked to, how soon could Dylan Gabriel start for this Browns football team? He played a little bit on Sunday in garbage time, but how soon could he start for this team?
Well, I don't sense like a major urgency to have to get Gabriel in the game right now as a starter, but it's a fluid situation like a lot of these are. You saw it last year with the Patriots and, you know, Jacoby Brissett and him getting benched for Drake May. Like any bridge quarterback that's a bridge to a rookie draft pick, you have to win games to hold them off. If you don't win games, they're typically going to move on and see what the younger guy can do, and it's a nod to the future, and you go from there. But I don't sense that they're there yet. They feel like Flacco played pretty well week one. I know week two didn't go so well against the better team, a better defense, but they feel pretty good overall about where Flacco's at. And yeah, they're trying not to totally rush this thing is my understanding, but it gets to a point in this league where it's week to week and you have to try to win. And I think Gabriel's mobility eventually will help him get in the lineup.
Jeremy Fowler joining us here on the fan hotline. All right, I kept asking the question, and it because it's been brought up here this week after the Ravens game. You know, Kenny Pickett, they went. He was the first quarterback in the QB room this offseason. Then he gets traded for the fifth-round pick with the Raiders. First question is, was he Kevin Stefanski's guy? And then the second question I have to ask is, if he was Kenny Pickett, why would they trade him when, you know, Kevin is the two-time coach of the year, and some people believe he might be fighting for his job by the end of the year?
Well, I don't know specifically if Kenny was Kevin's guy. I know that they thought he was good value at the time for a fifth-round pick. Like, a lot of their off-season quarterback outlook had not developed yet at that time. They hadn't drafted anybody yet. So Kenny was considered good value and at the very least gave him a baseline option that they can go out with and know that he can run the offense functionally and he can move around a little bit. You know, he's a mobile guy. And it's a quarterback that they did like, yes, but really all along, well, I wouldn't say all along, but like coming out of the draft, I still remember hearing from some people with the Browns that like, hey, look, they got four quarterbacks now. They could certainly trade one. Like that's an option that they could exhaust. That was sort of the feeling I would say around the league. And then, you know, Andrew Berry said like, hey, we're open to keeping four quarterbacks. And it did appear that that was an option at one point. But I still go back to kind of what I was hearing in early May, which was like, you know, they're going to trade one of these guys. And Kenny had value. Joe was kind of clearly the starter at that point. They had two rookies to develop. It just made sense to move on from him at that point. I don't think it was like, wow, this was Kevin's guy, and then now we're, you know, moving him away from the team, and Kevin lost his soulmate. Like, I don't think it was that at all. This is a value-based league, and Kenny still had value for a team like the Raiders that needed a backup.
All right, Jeremy Fowler joining us on the hotline, giving us his excellent insights into this situation. Does the schedule matter? Sometimes around the league, you know, you look at the schedules, the Browns start with a brutal one. Had it have been much softer earlier, do you think that could have changed anything?
Change anything as far as who they would have started or how they would have
started? Yeah, or how quickly they would be open to moving on.
That's a good question. I don't know. When you look at the schedules, I do think the media makes more of the schedule than the teams because there's so much parity now. Like, there are probably 20 good teams, so every week is going to be tough unless you're playing one of the bottom feeders. I feel like it's 16 to 20 teams can win anywhere from 8 to 13 games, and then the other 12 are going to be pretty bad. That's kind of how it's been or how it feels like. And so most weeks you're going to have one of those tough teams. Like the fact that Cleveland opened with two playoff teams or teams that are playoff caliber, like I don't think that affects the thinking all that much, just in my experience. It just was clear all along in camp that, that Joe Flacco was going to be the starter. I don't think there was any doubt. You know, when I talked to people over there, it just felt like he was a cut above, and he knows how to run Kevin's system. I thought he was showed a little more mobility than maybe I thought week one. I know that didn't work out week two against the defense that was kind of living in the backfield and all over him, but I don't sense there's any sort of strategy in that regard with the schedule. I think it was more just like I do think they legitimately wanted that quarterback battle to play out organically just by the way they were running it, where you had four guys getting reps on dual fields, and they wanted to just see how it went. Like, the time I visited their training camp in late July, it was clear that, like, they were trying to get guys as many throws as possible, all four of them, and just kind of duel it out that way. It was actually pretty unique compared to a lot of camps I go to where third stringers, fourth stringers don't get a lot of reps. So, you know, I don't think there was a plot strategically about the schedule or about how things had to go a certain way. I think they just wanted to see it play out, knowing that Joe was probably the favorite all along.
Jeremy Fowler joining us from ESPN. Adam Schefter had that report before the game started on Sunday about the Ravens having plans to draft Shedeur Sanders, Shedeur rebuffing them. Did you get the same sense that he wanted to be a starter, so he didn't really want to go to Baltimore?
Well, I don't know if it was specific to Baltimore. I think it was more about, well, look, this is a quarterback that thought he was going to be drafted much higher, and as a result, wanted to go to a place where he feels like he can play. But I think I think in the micro, that story speaks to some of the issues Shedeur had with the process. You know, like, I know I talked to one team in particular that interviewed Shedeur, that looked at him pretty hard, that was drafting a quarterback. And, you know, he would ask questions in those meetings such as, like, well, what kind of weapons are you going to put around me? Instead of, like, focusing on the film that they're breaking down in the pre-draft interview. You know, like, he was thinking in terms of, like, what situation am I going to be in? As opposed to, you know, how can I impress with my knowledge in this particular meeting? So, not that he was, with these teams I talked to, like, you know, difficult or came off as a bad personality or anything like that. It just, there was probably a little bit of a nod to a self-serving part of the draft, which, you know, he thought he was going to go much higher. So that's sort of understandable on some levels. So I don't know if I was overly surprised by that story when I saw it, you know, and plus it, on day three, there's a lot of time that teams have to think about what happened the day before, and you're sort of taking chances on players that maybe you normally wouldn't. Fourth, fifth round, you know, if you're the Ravens, you might be thinking, hey, Shedeur's great value. So let's make a call to either him or his representative or Dion and try to feel that situation out. You know, and look, if I'm Shedeur, I mean, Baltimore, you could argue Baltimore would be a great situation to go to because going to a great team, you're learning from Lamar Jackson. Maybe you get to play at some point or go somewhere else to play. But, you know, he's a two-time MVP, so it's like if you had a pick, you'd probably rather go elsewhere if you're trying to play early. I do understand from his standpoint why he would want that.
I love having Jeremy Fowler on with us because he'll level with us, so we'll just get right to it. Will Deshaun Watson factor into this conversation at all this year, or should we as a show stop talking about him?
You know, I'll never say never. I don't get the sense that he's been in the plans this year. Plus, he's, you know, look, he's got a long way to go. I do think he's progressing nicely, and he's been throwing for a while now, I know. He's been getting after it. Like, I remember even the day I was there in Cleveland for a training camp, he was throwing around a ton of weight in the background in that weight room that's adjacent to the practice fields. Like, he was getting after it. He was also visible, which with a big crowd wasn't necessarily a surprise to me, but he was in there working hard. I've heard nothing but good things about how he's approached the rehab, how he's helped the other quarterbacks in the quarterback room. He has been a total team guy. He hasn't been a drag. You know, he's been a positive influence on the other quarterbacks, from my understanding. The camaraderie's been good. So I'll never totally take it off the table, but I think based on all that's happened, and I do think about the insurance policy that the team does have on Deshaun and some of the cap savings that could be involved, and could that be jeopardized if you put him back out there? I cannot speak for the team, but I do think about that. And if I had to make an educated guess, I would think that that is a factor in all this. So there's a lot of play. It would be at least a mild surprise to me if he played this year.
Well, it's just there's been some reporting out there that, you know, the Browns really want this to be a stand on the sidelines, learn the game year for Shador. And if that is the case and we get into one of those emergency situations, there is somebody who's still getting paid a lot of money. And look, they took his signage down all over the stadium. Jeremy, there's no real visible signs of Deshaun Watson in a lot of their engagement. They did wish him a nice happy birthday over the weekend on social media. So that's why I want to know. He also got to say Jimmy Haslam, the owner, attended his wedding over the offseason. So it doesn't seem like there's any bad blood between the two sides.
No, I don't think so. I do go back to what Jimmy Haslam said in the offseason about essentially admitting the mistake that was signing and Deshaun and trading for him. And, you know, that was a pretty bold statement. I think that was his way of letting the team move on, you know, and him sort of shouldering the blame for that. Whether he plays there or not, again, at least it provides a collective exhale, I think. That's not necessarily a knock on Deshaun, but it's just a way for everybody to, like, regroup. After 3 years, it just didn't go the way anybody planned. So, and it was quite the journey. I mean, I know the play was not good, but it's unfortunate with the injury timing because he had some windows there, or at least a few games, especially in that second year where it's like, okay, he's turning the corner a little bit. Then injuries happen, and then he comes back. The play wasn't good. They tried to tailor the offense around them and got Ken Dorsey involved. It's just like the whole thing never came together. So I think because of that, it's, you know, it'd be hard to see him playing this year. But, like, to your point, and when I talk to Browns people about this, they insist that he's been a very hard worker and he's been great to deal with. I don't think he's been a problem behind the scenes at all, and I think the relations are good. It just didn't work out.
Jeremy Fowler joining us here on the show. Tone, you wanted to ask about Tom Brady before
I
ask my question.
Right now, there seems to be some angst around the league as people are starting to notice. Yeah, the guy's broadcasting games and can get into any type of meeting, talk to coaches around the league. He's also now sitting in the coach's box on Monday night. The NFL said this is okay. What are you hearing from people?
Well, they're saying it's okay because they had cleared this before. I mean, ownership allowed it with a vote that you have to get a majority on, 24-8 at least, among the 32 owners. And this has been approved already, so they're not going to go back on that. And, if you're a minority owner, you're allowed to sit in the box, you know. There are some stipulations to all this. I don't have it all in front of me, but I know that teams, I could see them being a little skeptical of telling Tom Brady specific intel in a pre-production meeting. Like, I could see that being an issue, and that's probably a theme that's not going away anytime soon. And so, the Raiders are... they're walking sort of a difficult line, at least from Pete Carroll's standpoint, where you have to answer questions about it, and you have to make sure that, Brady's not too involved, but also he's a minority owner that they can probably help the team and is a good resource in a lot of ways, and that's allowed because of what's been approved and his role in the team. So, and look, make no mistake, I mean, he's been involved, or at least when you talk to people around the league, they believe he's been firmly involved in a lot of the decisions there. Certainly the GM and the head coach are making those, but you know, Mark Davis structured this to, he wants Tom Brady a part of the process. So at the very least, he is that.
Jeremy Fowler joining us from ESPN. How stable is the footing for Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry in their jobs right now?
Well, it's week three, and I don't think that anybody around the league expected them to be 2-0 right now. So with two tough AFC North teams, I thought the offense was better than I expected week one, and then week two, you know, didn't go as well, but at least they did run the ball and had some promise with guys like Quinshon Judkins. And I don't think it's an issue right now. I just don't. You know, there are other teams around the league I think it's a little stronger. I feel like Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are well supported there. They made the trade in the draft with multiple years in mind, That was made very clear to me. So it wasn't a panic move. I think if they had to win now or win the first eight games of this year or else, then they would have made a different draft move. That's my opinion, just based on kind of asking around and kind of knowing what I know about that draft process. So, you know, I'd be surprised if anything happens in the short term, but you have to win in this league. And so, you know, the team's sitting at a really ugly spot in November or whenever it is, like, I'll never take anything off the table. I just don't sense a lot of urgency to make something happen right now, as opposed to, like, you know, the pressure that's around, say, Miami right now, or maybe some other hot spots.
Jeremy, how bad do the Browns look with Baker Mayfield playing the way he has through two games following up his playoff season a year ago?
Well, Baker's been playing well for 2.5 years now, so this is really nothing new. I mean, I know it's convenient, and he played on Monday Night Football to come from behind victory, and those are always bigger stages, those primetime games, but, you know, he's been balling. He's been a top-10 quarterback for more than a year. You know, Tampa hit that one out of the park by signing him to a one-year, $5 million deal, whatever it was, 2 years ago, and then they extended him to what's now an incredible bargain. I think he's at 30-something million dollars a year when, you know, guys like Dak Prescott are making 60. So, I mean, the Baker divorce, I'll never quite understand. For whatever reason, they just got to a point where they were not hitting it off. I do think Baker has matured a lot, and he's been humbled, and that is part of it, you know. And so it didn't always go so well in Cleveland, and there was some friction there. So it's like, I think the team felt like there was a ceiling that Baker had in Cleveland. But, you know, the people, the scouts, and those who evaluated Baker and always loved him, like, they saw things that have translated in Tampa, which he's super accurate, super competitive, you know, fierce competitor, will get after it, can make difficult throws, and is really tough. So all that's played out, you know. It's, I mean, we can go through the revisionist history for an hour if we wanted to, but the truth is that several teams were trying to trade for Deshaun Watson, who, before he sat out that year in Houston, was a top five quarterback in the NFL. And I will say things have changed a little bit, I feel like, with the haves and the have-nots of the quarterback, like, sort of outlook league-wide, where at that time, 4 or 5 years ago, or when teams were evaluating quarterbacks, it's like, if you don't have a top 10 guy, you have no chance. Like, that was sort of the feeling. And I do think that now it's a little different. You got Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, Daniel Jones now. Carson Wentz is about to play in Minnesota. Like, teams are now realizing that these really talented former top 10 picks, sometimes they just need a reset. They need a better environment. I don't know that Baker would have been ultra successful if he stayed in Cleveland. Like, it just got to a point where it was a difficult relationship. Sometimes that happens. You know, you got Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. He's really talented. I think he can go somewhere else in a year or two and have success. So, it's that recycled nature of the quarterback position is sometimes needed for both parties.
At Jay Fowler, ESPN on Twitter. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN. Jeremy, go enjoy the doggos, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Jeremy Fowler.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Nick!
Hello. How are you, sir?
Nick. What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
Good, good, good.
Well, we're pumped up. We had a baseball team that's knocking on the door. We don't know. We don't necessarily think it's going to get into the playoffs, but it's knocking on the door, Nick.
Yeah, so the Guardians have won, what, 9 of 10? taking care of the Tigers. 4.5 games out of the division, 2.5 games behind both the Red Sox and the Mariners for the final or even the second wild card spot in the American League. So what's fascinating about the Guardians, and we see this in baseball, right, where teams can get hot at the right time, and it's certainly possible that the Guardians keep up this red-hot play, and maybe they catch Boston, who's obviously without one of their best young players, Roman Anthony. The Mariners have been really hot. I doubt Seattle's going to fall back to that degree. And I am a Yankees fan, but I do think the Yankees are good enough to not fall completely out of the playoffs. What's very funny is even if you look at the Rangers, who are right behind the Guardians, well, two games back of Cleveland in the wild card race, the Rangers' run differential is plus 87. The Red Sox, plus 104. The Mariners, plus 56. The Yankees, plus 128. The Guardians' run differential this year is minus 25. So they are, like, wildly. And it sounds like I'm saying that as a negative. It means that this is, like, a clutch team, right? And, like, a well-managed team with Stephen Vogt. The fact that they're 9 games over 500 despite a negative 25 run differential is pretty crazy.
It is.
It tells me that they're over their skis right now. And I think it's unlikely that they make the playoffs. But look, on baseball, all you have to do is get hot towards the end of the year, and you can absolutely make a run. So I'm fascinated to see what the next week or so is going to hold for the Cleveland Guardians and also for the Red Sox and the Mariners and the Rangers and my New York Yankees in the American League.
All right, so who do you like for the wild card then with this race being so tight?
I'll take the three teams that are in it right now, and I'm going to end up losing some money. I liked the Rangers a lot at various points this season to make it, and it just feels like they're not going to be able to get over the hump. They've lost 4 straight games. They had been hot before that, so they're 4.5 games out now. Still like 11 games, like 2 weeks left in the season. It feels like Texas is really up against it here. I don't know if Cleveland has the horses. It would be cool if they made it, but I don't know if they have the horses. I think it'll be the three teams that are all in it right now. Yankees, Mariners, Red Sox, probably in that order, which means that the Yankees and Mariners would play each other in that wild card series.
We can't wait to see how it plays out. So it's great to get your thoughts on that. I'm hard pressed to think our team's going to be able to pull it off. They've won 11 of 12. They've been so streaky, Nick, that you just kind of think, all right, well, they're going to go the other way. I sure hope not, but it's been fun nonetheless. So
absolutely. If you're a fan, like you, this is what you want. Like, you want to be in September and have your team being alive for, have it clinched or be alive for a playoff berth. And they're squarely in it. So it's going to be 2 weeks of fun baseball in Cleveland, whether they make it or not. I'm not trying to be a hater when I say I don't think they're going to make it. They certainly could. But if I had to bet on it, I would bet against the Guardians making the playoffs.
I would too. And my guess is you'd bet against the Browns making the playoffs.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's... Oh, and just for context, I have it BetMGM right now, guys. The Guardians' odds to make the playoffs, yes, is plus 400, so a big plus price. No is a big minus favorite. So no is a big favorite for the Guardians. Again, doesn't mean they can't make it, but the betting market's kind of in line with my opinion here, and I'm just curious if Texas is listed. Yeah, so the Guardians do have better odds than the Rangers. 2 games up on them, even if I do think the Rangers are a better team. And no, like the Browns are not going to make the playoffs. But, you know, the final score last week, obviously the Ravens laid it on them and scored 41. And the Browns got that touchdown at the end with Dylan Gabriel to make it 41-17. Like, you guys watched the game. All your listeners watched the game.
Yep.
That was not a 41-17 game if you actually watched. I thought the Browns defense played very well in that game. Like, am I crazy for having that opinion?
No, you're right. You're right.
We're with you on that one.
Okay.
And I mean, the offense gave up 21 points. Let's be honest.
Yeah. And look, like, you can take a look at what happened in week one also, where the defense holds the Bengals to 17 points, and the Browns win that game, obviously, if not for the kicker, and then the receivers bobbling 2 balls right into the hands of Cincinnati Bengals defenders. So I'm not here to tell you guys that the Browns are an excellent team. They're not. They're going to go to the playoffs. They're not. But I do think that they are better than I think the national perception of them is right now. And it's been a fascinating betting market for this week when they host, obviously, what looks like the best team in the league through 2 weeks, the Packers, who annihilated the Lions and then annihilated the Commanders and have a mini bye here, right? They played last Thursday, so they're going to have 10 days off before this game, so they have the rest advantage as well. And despite all of that, the Browns have been like a pretty hot bet among sharp bettors. And for people out there that might think that's nuts, again, what I would point point you to is I think last week's final score is extremely misleading. This defense I actually think is good. Like, the defense is good. The offense is not good. And especially once Flacco inevitably gets benched and it's Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, it's going to be a disaster with those two quarterbacks, at least at the start. But I think there is some optimism, guys, that the Browns can keep it close this week. Maybe not win the game, but keep it close against the Packers. And the other thing I'll offer just on the Browns, and I've said this the first couple weeks I've come on the show, again, like, if you're a Browns fan, like, don't measure the success of this season in wins and losses. How do the young players look? And I thought for the second consecutive week, I thought a lot of the young players looked good on the Cleveland Browns, and I think that is cause for optimism.
Nick, what's your best bet for this week? What team do you feel the best about? NFL, obviously.
All right, so let's see where we're at with current numbers here. All right, the bet that I like the most, this is going to be one that people are not going to like, because I am betting against a team that has looked awesome to start the year. I'll take the Broncos +3 on the road at the Los Angeles Chargers and Justin Herbert.
Wow.
Listen, L.A.'s been great to start the year, obviously beating the Chiefs Friday night in Brazil of week one, and then nationally televised audience. And, like, I don't know if you guys stayed awake for the game. Like, I fell asleep in the fourth quarter. Like, so,
I was up and down the whole game. I was like a baby. I'd wake up, I'd look at a score, I'd close my eyes, I'd wake up, I'd watch
it's
like
it's crazy, right? Like, we're all operating on you guys are Eastern time, right? In Ohio,
yeah.
I'm right about that.
Yep.
So it's like, man, like, I got a young kid. Like, I can't stay up till 1 in the morning. It's really tough. But listen, like Herbert played well, and the Chargers, you know, intercepted Geno Smith 3 times, and the defense was great. So a lot of positive pub around the Chargers, and the Broncos are coming off like a mind-numbing last-second loss to the Colts, where Sean Payton blew it at the end, calling for a field goal block, the leverage call that enables the Colts for a 15-yard shorter attempt, and they make it. And Payton took responsibility for it after the game. Coming into the year, I liked the Broncos more than the Chargers, and I have to acknowledge that the Chargers do have a higher ceiling than I expected because they're throwing the ball. They have the highest guys, the Chargers. You wouldn't expect this with the Jim Harbaugh team. They have the highest pass rate over expectation of any team in the league, which means that, you know, if you expect them to run the ball, they are passing the ball more often than any other team in the league. So I have to acknowledge that their ceiling's a little higher, but I don't think they're 3 points better than the Broncos. This is going to be the best defense, probably by orders of magnitude, that the Chargers have faced this year, and I'd like to see Justin Herbert prove it to me in a spot like this. I'll take the 3 with Denver on Sunday.
What's up with Kansas City?
Well, a couple things. I do think that the quarterback needs to play better. I think he's missing more throws than he's missed in the past. He's the least of their concerns, but I do think that that's important to say. Also, Travis Kelce looks like, you know, he's like in the NWO. He's going to take his shirt off and he's going to have an NWO shirt on underneath. He's making multiple plays in the first two games of the season that hurt his team and benefit the other, whether it's injuring Xavier Worthy early in week one against the Chargers or, you know, not catching a pass right in his breadbasket on the goal line, bobbling it into the arms of Andrew Mukuba, who picks it off and takes it 50 yards the other way. You know, if he catches that ball, the Chiefs go up 17-13 against the Eagles, and maybe they win that game. So the Chiefs have a couple big issues right now. Kelsey's one. Mahomes is another. The defense is another. This is not as good a defense as it's been in previous years. And they have no explosion right now with Xavier Worthy out and Rashee Rice being suspended. Now, Worthy did practice yesterday in a limited fashion for the Chiefs, so maybe he's back on Sunday night at the Giants. I do think this does set up as a big-time get-right spot, guys, for the Chiefs. I'm a Giants fan. I can almost guarantee that Travis Kelce will score a touchdown and get off the schneid. I think the Chiefs win, get to 1-2. I still think they're a playoff team at the end of the day, but, man, I liked them to win the Super Bowl this year before the season, and I have to be honest, at this point now, they do not look like one of the two or three best teams in the conference at this moment.
All right, Nick, Jeff and I sit here and we debate this all the time because we are Kent State graduates and we are proud alumni, and we were thinking, going back and forth between, can they lose by 40 or 41? They've got a big game against Florida State. I mean, will you even look at a game like Kent State, Florida State? No, seriously. Well, is there a college game you like this week?
I'll give you just a quick thought on Florida State, Kent State. I can't name one player on Kent State.
That's so okay. We went there, and we probably can't either. Oh, no, I could. I was not even playing quarterback yet. Their quarterback's pretty good.
But here's how I'd like to think about the game, and it doesn't mean that I have to be right. But, you know, Florida State beats Alabama in week one, right? Mm-hmm. And the sky's falling for Bama, and it's like, yo, does Bama suck? Like, how good is Florida State? And Bama since then, and I kind of still think the jury's out on Bama this year to a degree, but Bama has been awesome since then, right? They're rattling off wins. They're winning games by huge amounts. And to me, like, that makes Florida State look even better, right? Because they didn't just beat Alabama in the season opener. They, like, handled Alabama in that game. And it's not like Bama struggled to beat Wisconsin this week, and it's not like this is a classically good Wisconsin team. But Wisconsin's not bad, like, not one of the worst teams in the country. And Bama destroyed them. So I think that makes Florida State look better. So if I had to bet that game, and I'm not going to, but if I did, I would actually lay the points with Florida State. A couple college games that I like for this weekend. Let's go to the Big 12, guys, where Baylor is a 2.5-point favorite on Saturday night against Arizona State. And I just want to talk about Baylor quarterback Sawyer Robertson, who's a huge price right now to win the Heisman. He probably can't win just because statistically, when you look at the history of this award, he's a little bit behind where most quarterbacks who win this award are at this point in the year. But he's electric. Like, he's going to be an NFL quarterback. He's going to be playing on Sundays. And I think that his ceiling makes Baylor one of the two best teams in the Big 12. I like Baylor laying the points. I like Baylor, a short money line price against Arizona State. We can stay in the Big 12. The noon kickoff game is Utah hosting Texas Tech.
Probably should be one of the best games of the weekend.
Yeah, should be an awesome game. And Utah, you know, Dampier, their quarterback, is one of the Heisman favorites. I don't know if he can win the award, but he's been great. Utah's been awesome. Utah's hosting this game. Utah has multiple NFL offensive linemen. Now, Utah's been getting bet out, so they're almost a 3.5-point favorite. This was under 3 a couple days ago. I think if you wanted to, you could pair, like I do, like a Utah-Baylor two-team parlay. I like that. And if I had to give you one other college game...
Auburn-Oklahoma would probably be the next best game.
I like Auburn.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So, look, John Mateer, Moneyline Mateer, he's been great. He's one of the Heisman favorites. Brent Venables looks like he's finally turned Oklahoma around and have them back as a national power. And they could definitely win this game. And it looks like this point spread, guys, is going to go to 7. So it's currently Oklahoma minus 6.5. The game's in Norman, but it's juiced towards the Sooners. So we might see a full 7 here, and that'll be my buy point on Auburn. Venables was a great defensive coordinator with Clemson and in other stops. I'll take Hugh Freeze as a head coach over Brent Venables. I think Auburn's awesome. I actually think that they're way underrated at this point right now, which, again, I don't know if they're going to win, but I do like them to cover. I will wait for a 7 for Auburn at Oklahoma, and I'm laying the points with Bryce Underwood in Michigan as well on the road at Nebraska this weekend.
Nick, Browns Packers, give us a quickie.
All right, so I'm just going to go back to my NFL tab to make sure I have the right. Okay, so on You Better You Bet a couple days ago, I talked about the under in the game, which was 42. Now we're sitting 41.5 with, you know, like the Browns offense is not very good, obviously, and the Packers defense is great. So how are the Browns going to score in this game? Like, how many points are the Browns realistically scoring in this game? But on the flip side, you know, Jaden Reed is out for the Packers, who's arguably their best, like, complete wide receiver. And the Browns defense has been, I know they let up 40, we talked about this, right? The defense was way better than the final score indicates and was great against the Bengals and Joe Burrow and company in week one. Are the Packers just going to roll out of bed and score like 30 points in this game? I'm not so sure. Now, like, Flacco potentially turning it over, defensive scores have me a little, like, I know a lot of people like the Browns. I don't know if I can make that bet. If I had to bet this game, guys, I would go under the total. This screams like 23-13 Green Bay, 23-16 Green Bay, 20-13 Green Bay, something like that coming up on Sunday.
All right, Nick, thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure.
You got it. Wishing everybody Minimal Sweats winning bets. The absolute very best of luck.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Insider Calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Brian Baldinger joins us this morning. Baldy, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you guys. Thanks.
Okay. I mean, you were a veteran in the league a long time. Browns are starting out with Joe Flacco. They got two pups behind him. It's only week three, but I got a lot of people going, guys, come on, we're wasting our time. We're not going anywhere. It's time to play the kids. How would be a problem if we played Dylan Gabriel now? Would it be a disaster? Are we wasting time with Joe Flacco? Tell me.
Are they going to catch the ball from Dylan Sampson or Dylan Gabriel? I mean, they can't catch it from Joe Flacco. They would have beaten Cincinnati easily if they didn't drop the ball. They dropped the ball last week. So, I mean, if the receivers don't catch the ball, it doesn't matter who's going to throw it. So, I mean, I think they'd be 1-1 right now if they could catch, if they could kick. You know, some of the basics of playing football, and they couldn't do that week one against Cincinnati. You know, Dylan Sampson looks like he's the only guy that can catch it every time they throw it to him. So I don't think it makes a difference right now.
What about from any of the film you've looked at? Because Jerry Jeudy thinks people just aren't looking at the film. He says he's getting open, but the wide receiver room as a whole, do you think they're having issues running routes?
Well, they didn't catch a ball. The wide receivers didn't catch a ball until 10 minutes to go in the second quarter. So, and he caught one for 26 yards, you know, when that happened. That went 19 plays without completing a pass to a wide receiver. I do think it's part of the issue is that they do have to get open better. But, you know, Cedric Tillman isn't separating from anybody right now. Jerry Jeudy is still the best receiver, but he's dropped a lot of passes. I think he's dropped three passes in the first two games. And one of them was intercepted against Cincinnati. So, I mean, it's a combination. You know, if they're going to go out there and if your receivers can't win one-on-ones, then they're not a good receiver. And so that's what Baltimore did a great deal of the time on Sunday.
Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. Dylan Sampson, you mentioned him twice. You like Dylan Sampson that much?
Yeah, I do. We caught the touchdown pass last week from Gabriel. He caught every pass thrown to him week one against Cincinnati. You know, I like both backs. I like Quinshon. I like Dylan. I think that's the future. Now, you could say, all right, well, if you're going to future is Mason Graham and Carson Schwessinger and Dylan Sampson and Quinshon Judkins, why not go with the quarterback? I mean, there's a legitimate argument to all of that, but I think Joe is playing. I mean, he's seen the field well, and, you know, you got two tackles out there that are struggling right now. I don't know what DeJuan's situation is. He's on and off the field. Cornelius Lucas has been a backup his whole life over there at right tackle. I mean, you know, I don't know if the protection is going to get better with any of the rookie quarterbacks back there.
Obviously, the Browns, we have had the luxury of having excellent offensive line play for, man, it seems like over a decade. But guys are aging. You know, Wyatt Teller is getting up there. Betonio is retiring after this year. Conklin probably retiring after this year. Is it just a matter of, even though we've got the names up there, they just aren't what they were in their prime? Is that what you might be noticing?
A little bit. I mean, I think everybody slows down at some point. Joe's been a great player in this league, and, you know, just a great player, period. But, I think some of that. But Baltimore heated them up pretty good. He got after, you know, I mean, Roquan Smith's coming on blitzes. The backs can't block him. So I don't care what back is in there. They couldn't block him. And, you know, he created a lot of havoc on Sunday. I imagine you're going to see the same thing this week. So, I mean, I like Dylan Sampson, but, you know, he's not going to block Roquan Smith coming in a full-speed blitz. So it's not just the offense line, it's the backs as well.
I wanted to ask you about that. We're talking to Brian Baldinger, so who better to ask about stuff like this when it comes to nitty-gritty football? They draft Sampson. We know, you know, he's not exactly the biggest guy in the world, but he's supposed to be a third-down back. But if he can't block guys in those situations, is that something that just he's young, so he's going to have problems with that? Or is that something you can certainly pick up over time with more experience?
No, I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, everything can be learned. And so, you know, most backs don't get an opportunity to do a lot of protection in college. And so I think that's part of it. But, you know, you don't get a chance to really practice that much at full speed. You know, I would imagine that at Tennessee, he didn't do a great deal of it. Most backs don't. So it's just something that he's got to. If he wants to be on the field on third downs, and I know he does, and I think he's going to be a good player, But you know, protection is pretty important at that point, because otherwise, you know, they're the guys that are supposed to be in coverage on him are just going to blitz, and so he blitzed the back. It's just a bob call, and he's got to get used to it.
Brian Baldinger joining us, Odyssey NFL Insider. Follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. How soon, when would be an appropriate time to play the, because, you know, you said, well, are they going to catch for Dylan Gabriel because they didn't catch for Joe Flacco? When would be an appropriate time where you go, all right, fine, we got to play the rookies?
I don't know. I don't know if there's an appropriate time. You know, you got to play your best players. You got to try to win every game. It's 0-2. They should be 1-1. It's not, I mean, I wouldn't even think about making a switch. I mean, it was nice that Dylan came in there and threw a pass, a touchdown pass to, a mop-up duty last week. But I don't know when they're playing the Green Bay Packers right now. They're coming in with maybe the best team in the whole, NFC. It's a great test. I mean, the way they're playing defense right now, if they could shut Green Bay down and make it a game or win the game, I mean, that changes everything. You know, Flacco's your guy. But if they keep losing games, at some point you're going to play the rookie and see what they have, but it's way too early. It's only September.
You know, there's been some thought that, with the league and the too high safety thing, that maybe it's going to make life so much tougher on the Browns offense with Joe Flacco. He's obviously not somebody who has a threat to run. And we haven't really seen him launching the deep balls like earlier in his career, or even during the run a couple of years ago when they went to the playoffs. So what are you seeing from, schematically, with how defenses are not just going up against the Browns, but everybody, and what can you do with a kind of a statue quarterback to try to beat those defenses?
Well, I don't think Joe's a statue. I mean, he's moving out there and he's running for first downs and he's extending plays. I think he's anything but a statue. I don't think Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders runs any better than Joe. So I don't agree with that. In fact, I think Joe looks faster now than he did when he was a rookie in 2008. But they got to run the ball better. I mean, period. Judkins had the one big run last week. Otherwise, they're averaging about 3 yards a carry. So, everything in this offense is going to be based off, some sort of a run action. And so they got to run it better up front. And, they got to have better blocking from across the board. I haven't seen Joe Bitonio pull like I thought I was going to see him pull in a lot of power plays. Maybe they need to get back to that. The last thing you want to do in this game against Green Bay is, be forced to drop back to throw with Micah Parsons and Rashawn Gary coming off the edge against the tackles that are going to line up on Sunday. So, I mean, it's going to be an emphasis this week, and hopefully they run the ball a lot better than what they've shown so far.
Brian Baldinger joining us here. Brian, you look at the defense, and I know they gave up 41 points last week, but it wasn't, all defense, a lot off special teams, turnovers, things like that. How do you keep a team together when one side of the ball is struggling so much and the other side of the ball, it's only been a couple weeks, they've been playing at a nearly elite level?
Well, I mean, Jim Schwartz is a Super Bowl winning coach. Like, he knows what he's doing, and those guys have responded to him. Defense is playing great, and you can't ask anything more. I mean, whether it's run defense, pass defense. Look, at some point, if it continues like this, they will wear down, and they might not play at the same fever that they have played. But, you got two rookies out there, Mason Graham and Carson Schwechinger. They're playing great, and they don't know any different. Their job is to get off the field, stop the run. They've been doing all of that. I mean, they look like two great picks at this point. Miles is a freak. I think he just wants to put quarterbacks in the graveyard. I don't think they're in danger of that yet. But at some point, the offense has to carry their load as well. So I don't know if there's going to be any sort of a drop because the offense isn't performing well. But I'm not worried about it right now. I think Jim Schwartz has those guys playing great.
Just a few questions from around the league. What do you think of the wild outcomes when it comes to the kicking game and the new rules and how it seems to be throwing field position off? Is this something that you like? Do you like the entertainment factor of it? Or do you think we're getting a little too far away from football?
Well, they wanted the return in the game, and the return is in the game. And so, teams are getting great starting field position. It really changes the way you call offense. If you're at the the 30, the 35, the 40-yard line. But, you know, the teams that are kicking it and putting in play and are covering kicks well, I think that's good for football because I think you kickoff coverage is an extension of defense. Most of those guys covering the kicks are defensive players or backups that want to get on the field and play, and you're seeing great coverage around the league where teams, you know, can't get the ball to the 20-yard line. So I think it's been really good for all the way around, you know, whether you're great at kickoff coverage or, you know, you can't quite put the ball where you want to put it and they're getting the ball at the 35-yard line, there's consequences. So I like the way it's going right now.
Baldy, the Fox broadcast seemed over the tush push last week. You know, after all these years, we haven't really seen the injuries that people thought would happen, but could it be at risk just based on watchability, the inability to officiate it? Guys are lining up offsides, guys are moving early, and no one knows where the hell the football is.
Well, I haven't seen an injury yet on the tush push. All right, so I mean, anybody who wants to make that as part of their argument to can it, well, I don't see one. I haven't seen one. So, and that's 3 years of the Eagles doing this. I see other teams doing versions of the tush push. Like, that's just the Philadelphia Eagles, but, you know, maybe Kansas City should be better on defense on first down and not allowing it to get to third and one the way they did, you know, throughout the game. So I don't have a problem with the play. Other teams have tried it. They're not as good at it. And the Eagles only really run it to the left. And maybe there's a reason why they only run it to the left. They've got a great left guard in Landon Dickerson and a great left tackle in Jordan Mailata. Other teams don't have that. Cleveland doesn't have that. You know, I mean, if other teams had that type of power and run blocking ability, maybe more teams would use the tush push.
Travis Hunter, Lima, you're concerned about Travis Hunter. I don't want to ask the question. You had a perfect question to ask.
Go ahead. I notice already people are wondering, is he a little distracted having to play at a high level, two different positions? They got the snaps up more this week, but, you know, in the end, he just really hasn't been a dynamic player on either. So that's only two games, obviously, but is this something sustainable?
Well, I mean, he hasn't had the big play yet on offense, and he hasn't done much outside of, you know, tackling a catch or two in the first two games. He hasn't had much of an impact. Jacksonville really should have won the game the other day if they could catch the ball as well. I mean, the star wide receiver is in a funk, and you know, they they've done a lot of good things as an organization. They're running the ball better than they ever have over the last couple of years. And they got a rookie running back in Bashaul Tooten, who's really has been the rookie star right now for them. But they're playing really good football. They should have beaten Cincinnati. I mean, that game was in the bag. They just couldn't finish it. But I think there's going to be a time when Travis Hunter explodes onto the scene. I haven't seen much defensively from him yet, and that's where I'm kind of curious if he's really going to be a two-down player. He's got to show up on defense and make something happen out there, and he hasn't been able to do that so far.
Kenny, you going to have the guts to ask him?
What? I'm not asking him the question.
You going to do it?
No, you ask him the question. I'm done. So you ask him the question.
Is Baker Mayfield elite?
Yeah, he's elite. I mean, you watch those two comebacks. He's just engineered 11 plays, 80 yards. He scrambles on 4th and 10 to get 15 yards and does a flip at the end of the play. There's only 9 other guys in the history of the game that did what Baker Mayfield did last year, which was throw for over 4,500 yards and over 40 touchdowns. Only 9 other guys. I mean, we all know great quarterbacks. Only 9 other guys that did what Baker's done. He's on the same pace this year, and he's doing it behind an offensive line that doesn't have his left tackle, lost the right tackle. The left guard is playing center. The right guard is now hurt. Nobody wants to talk about any of that, but Baker covers for all of it.
All right, that wasn't
Kenny wanted him out of town.
No,
that's amazing.
Yeah, no, you wanted him out of town, and you wanted Deshaun Watson. Let me ask you this question, because this is a real question to ask. Brian, right. Would Baker Mayfield be this version of Baker Mayfield had he still be with the Browns?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the changes that he had to go through to Carolina, to the Rams, I think all those things were necessary. But he got to a really stable place with an organization that has stability. I mean, they've got a great general manager that has drafted fantastic. They got a head coach who's steady. You know, Baker's done this with 3 different offensive coordinators in 3 years. It doesn't seem to make much difference. But the organization around him believes in him, has committed to him. He's got great receivers. He's got the best left tackle in football when he's healthy. There's a lot of good pieces there with him.
Brian Baldinger. Follow him on Twitter. Follow him on social media in general. He has a great video that he posted about 11, 12 hours ago of Myles Garrett. Compares him to an NFL legend pass rusher. You got to go find it to find out what pass rusher Myles Garrett has.
Right,
there you go. See, that's a tease. I teased him for you, Brian.
That's
there you go. My
that's a good tease. I like that.
Follow him on social media at Baldy NFL. Brian, thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Brian Baldinger, NFL insider from Odyssey. That was Brian Baldinger. He's host of the Best Football Show. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side.
I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. Meredith, you just heard taking your phone calls at 216-474-0092. Dan Menigan is behind the glass making sure we do whatever it is we're supposed to do.
Let me know when that is when you find
out. Yeah, when we were sitting around before the show, all of a sudden Dan said, "Ah." I said, "What?" And Dan said, "Robert Redford has passed away." And the legendary actor Robert Redford, 89 years old, passing away. And when I think of Robert Redford, you know, you think of some of the movies that he did, I immediately think The Natural.
And Roy Hobbs right out of the gate. I know he did a lot of great movies.
Me too.
Butch Cassidy. I mean, there's just so many.
And a good
Jeremiah Jones, I think, was one of the first movies I ever saw with my dad. Jeremiah Johnson, sorry. Was one of the first movies I ever saw with my dad at the old Center Mayfield on Mayfield Road.
I just, The Natural is my all-time favorite movie, period. Let alone sports movie. It's my favorite movie, period. And he was great in it. Other than trying to play a 17-year-old kid at the age of 50 or whatever he was, everything about that movie was perfect. And he was great in that. And it's tough when you see these guys, you know, who have been in your life in some way, shape, or form, your entire life, passing away. You know, when you think of him and Paul Newman together.
Oh, my
goodness gracious.
Oh.
That's pretty awesome.
I was just thinking back to some of the great lines from Roy Hobbs, and I don't know. My dad wanted me to be a baseball player. Remember that? I just like, there are so many lines that can stick with you. And like, I remember writing a paper in college about how I was mad at Barbara Hershey. I wrote a paper on.
At Barbara Hershey. She's not very nice.
Well, on Hoosiers. And I was still like, I couldn't get over the fact that
giving Norman Dale all that, you know what?
No. I mean, it was because she shot Roy Hobbs, right? So,
well, she shot Roy Hobbs and she gave Norman Dale, you know what?
Yeah. I'm just saying, man, like I couldn't get, I remember writing in this paper, I'm like, I can't get over Barbara Hershey. I love this movie. I love Hoosiers, but I can't, all I see is the woman that pulled the trigger on Roy Hobbs.
If Roy hadn't struck out, whammer might not have happened.
That's a good point. It was the whammer.
She turned her head and it was like all over.
All that barnstorming will do that to you, won't it? What a great actor, though. I don't know. I always appreciated him. And if you've ever been out to, if you've ever been out to Park City for Sundance, not that I've ever been out there, but I've been out there a couple times and not during Sundance. And he loved that part of Utah where he was living. And he
lived out there, right?
He passed away he passed away at Sundance. He had a couple ranches out there too, but I don't know. What a great actor. And just,
wouldn't you like to have a couple of ranches somewhere?
Well, you win a couple Oscars, I think you get a chance to do that. Oscar. Yeah. Well, I'd be happy to look at a Marconi.
I think that's true.
Mm. Yeah, it's sad though. I'm bummed. I just thought he was a great actor.
Remind me to give the answer to this at the end of the segment, okay, Dana?
Okay.
Which former Cleveland Indian was an extra in The Natural?
Okay, I know the answer, so I'll move forward.
Just, we'll share that.
I will abstain from speaking at this point.
So Robert Redford, 89 years old.
And, 89, man.
Thank you for all of the great work that you did to entertain all of us for so many years. The movie Tin Cup didn't have Robert Redford.
Nope.
It had Kevin Costner.
And the guy that played it in a ton more sports movies than him, right?
Yeah. Every time you turn around, there's Costner doing another sports movie. But, you know, the movie Tin Cup is funny, and we all think, yeah, great. He's got a chance to win, but he's immortal because he just kept trying to clear the water.
Right.
Well, last week, if you haven't heard this already, John Daly, who you want to talk about a hoot in the world of people who aren't a hoot, that's John Daly on the PGA Tour. John Daly was participating, and John's about 60 now. He was participating in the PGA Tour Champions Sanford International. It was at the Minnehaha Country Club.
Oh, okay.
And he was doing okay. These are his scores, okay?
Okay.
And so he's playing in this senior event, and I'll go through the front nine. Ready?
Okay.
Four.
Oh, good.
Three.
Oh, good.
Four, five, four, three, four, three, four. So on the front nine, he shot a 37. He had a bogey. I was reading the par instead of what he shot. So he had a bogey, he had a bird, he had two other bogeys. Then here are his back nine scores. Ready?
Okay.
4-4-19.
Oh, man, I can do that. That's why I
John
love golf.
John Daly had a 19 in a PGA tournament. A 19. They called it a, I don't even know how to pronounce it, a tetradeca bogey.
How many shots did he actually take?
Tetradeca bogey. And here's how it happened. He had 7 golf balls land out of bounds, either in the water in front of the green or in the wooded area off to the left, according to NBA Sports. It's believed to be the highest single hole score of his playing career. And he's had several of these over the years.
Awesome.
Where John just says, heck with it. I'm going tin cup. I'm going to clear it.
I love it.
19.
He had 7 penalties on the hole.
19.
7 penalties.
And you know what? He got up and down on his last 2 shots to save 19.
I love it. So his second shot was from the
shot like a he could have had a 21 if he didn't get up and down.
This is awesome. His second shot was from the primary rough. Then he took a penalty. His fourth shot was from the primary rough, and then he took a penalty. 6th primary rough, then a penalty. 8th primary rough penalty. 10th primary rough penalty. 12th primary rough penalty. 14th primary rough penalty. Then on 16 he took one from the primary rough. Didn't have to take a penalty. Hit another one from the primary rough. I can only imagine what that was. Then he hit one from the intermediate rough. And then on shot 19, he got it in the hole. So I'm assuming he only one putted on this.
It sounds like it. He got it up and down to save 19. So he chipped and one putt.
I wonder what was the score in tin cup? I wonder how many shots he actually took.
I want to say it was a 12, but I don't know. Daly shot an 88 with a 19.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, first you said he
shot an 88.
You're like, he shot an 88. I'm like, okay, well, he broke 100. That's good, isn't it?
If he took away the 12th hole, he shot a 69.
Wow. That's makes the game great.
I met John Daly years ago. He had just won the PGA at Crooked Stick.
All I know is like 2 years ago, he was at the Senior Open here, man. He got hopped up. They had a concert out there. He hopped out on stage.
Oh, yeah.
He was singing like everybody that was hanging with
John
Daly.
He's enjoying the good life, man.
Had a great time, yeah.
He's enjoying the good life, beard and all. I met him at Firestone.
Ding!
And, well, it was, he had just won the PGA at Crooked Stick. Remember, what was he, 6th alternate, and he gets in and then he wins.
Was he wearing shoes?
And, you know, the way that guy putts.
Did he have a cigarette in his
putting,
hand?
No, not then. Oh. But he was this young guy, you know, and he had, I lived in Stowe when I was in first grade.
Did
and,
you?
I don't know if that's. No, okay. I did.
Okay.
And I lived on the same street as this nice couple who didn't have any kids, and they were older, but, you know, God knows they probably weren't that old. But I learned after he won Crooked Stick, one of our old neighbors from Stowe told us that John Daly was the nephew of this couple.
From Stowe?
From Stowe.
Wow.
And so when I met him, I just said, hey, I didn't know them well, but I knew your aunt and uncle. And I said his name, and he goes, oh, and he
We gave you a hug.
We sat there for 20 minutes and talked.
About your aunt and uncle?
No, about everything.
His
aunt and uncle and everything else, and then everything else. He just stood there, and we just talked. And he was a really nice guy, real regular dude. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that over the years. He's more regular than regular could possibly be. So much so that he gets a 19.
How great was he at Happy Gilmore 2, though?
He was awesome in that.
He was great.
He really was. living in the garage. Living in Happy's garage. If you haven't seen the movie, go see it. John Daly's great in it.
Spoiler
and he plays John Daly. What does Happy call him throughout the movie?
Isn't it Uncle John?
Is it Uncle John Daly?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's living in the garage. It's really fun.
Also, and I think we need to, you know, moment of silence, RIP, anything like that. Did you guys see about a month ago that the John Daly Hooters shut down in Augusta, Georgia?
I did hear that. Yes.
That's the end of an era.
They have the best chicken wings, man. I love their wings.
For those of you who don't know, he used to park his RV there and would basically live out of that Hooters all of Masters Week, where he would do a whole bunch of signings. He'd watch everything. Like it was known as the John Daly Hooters.
You know, you actually can't tell a lady that you go to Hooters for the chicken wings because they don't believe you.
I'm trying to think. It's been a long time. I was in South Bend about 7 or 8 years ago.
They have great chicken wings.
There's no way those things are healthy for you. No way.
I get
there's
them plain and then dip them in the sauce.
Their sauce is really good. I wonder if they use butter.
The question isn't if. The question is how much.
Yeah.
How much.
There's
Joe Posnanski is a big-time national writer. Joe's from here. Joe's been with us before. He has a new book out. He's a Guardians fanatic. He's a baseball nut. Likes the Browns, too. Joe's coming up next right here on Baskin and Phelps. You read Paul Hoynes in the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. If you're looking for great talk about the Guardians, you listen to the Baseball Talk podcast with Paul Hoynes and Joe Noga. Paul Hoynes joining us right now on the Fan Hotline. Hello, Hoynesy.
Hoynesy!
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How do you like doing that podcast?
You know, talking is a lot easier than writing, I found. but I used to think that. But now I'm running out of words, man.
Put it this way. I've never seen a baseball break someone's mouth like it can a computer if it flies into the press box. So you got that going for you.
That's exactly right.
So here are a couple of things. Here we are in mid-September. There are 13 games left in the season, and the Guardians are not only just playing games that matter. Wednesday, they're not done yet. Not likely, but they're not done.
That's right, Jeff. They're kind of in it on two fronts. You know, they've got a chance at the division and a chance in the wild card, and I guess that's why they expanded, you know, the wild card kind of, you know, bracket to from 2 to 3 teams. It keeps a lot of teams involved at this time of year.
All right, Hoynesy, give me your gut feeling. Will they be there when the postseason rolls around?
You know, Andy, I think the odds are against them. I really do. I think this is a steep hill to climb on both fronts. You know, you look at the Tigers, they've got to almost sweep, don't they? They got to take 6 straight or 5 or 6. And then you need help. The chances are in the wild card are better, especially because they can play Texas the last 3 games of the season. But even that's a tall order because the teams shift so fast in there. You know, for weeks they were chasing Seattle. Now they're chasing Houston. You know, and that could flip back before the end of the season again. So it's just the best way to get into the postseason is to win the division. You know, then you just take care of everything else. You don't have to worry about the extraneous stuff.
Hoynesy, the 6-man rotation for 17 games in 17 days, a rousing success. Congratulations, huh?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I was not a big fan when they did that. You know, I know when Tito was here, he was definitely against the 6-man rotation. But in this case, in this instance, you know, it was the perfect solution for their problem because, one, they didn't have Class A, So you got to cover an extra inning in the bullpen. Two, you know, all of their starters, their young starters, have maxed out on their, you know, innings pitched or career innings pitched already. And three, it gives them, gave them kind of an advantage, I think, because, you know, the starters all had an extra day's rest. And I think they were stronger going into that stretch. They, you know, since they went to the six-man rotation, they're 7-1 with, you know, some kind of ungodly ERA, like 1.176, something like that. But they've done a great job with it.
And going to that six-man rotation, how much more do you think that's improved the bullpen? It's been less taxing. It feels like it's been less taxing on the bullpen.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, Andy. You know, I think, you know, we've seen it with Cade Smith. You know, he's been used, you know, he's really come into his own. He's, what, he saved 8 straight saves. And I think the guy that's really benefited has been Hunter Gaddis. You know, I thought he was getting a little gassed at the, you know, about a month ago because they kept going to him for more than one inning. And now he's, you know, he's one back into that one inning slot, kind of the setup slot, and his stuff looks great.
Paul Hoynes joining us, plaindealercleveland.com. On his way to Detroit, he'll be covering the Guardians against the Tigers, and of course, a baseball talk podcast with Hoynesy and Joe Noga that you definitely want to listen to. Do you think, Hoynesy, this year has been not what they wanted for Travis Bezzana? I don't want to. I mean, they're still in this thing right now. I think we're all in the same opinion. Unlikely that they make the playoffs. So we're looking ahead a little bit. Do you think Bezzana is on track to be here next year? And do you think in any way, shape, or form they regret taking him number one overall?
I don't think they regret taking him, Jeff. I think they regret that he got hurt. You know, because if you just look at it, you kind of pull back and you look at it from a big picture standpoint. You know, this is a guy that got, yeah, he was one of one, you know, in 2024. But, you know, this is his first full season as a professional. He's already at AAA. The problem was he kept getting hurt, you know. But I think, you know, their plan was for him to help out the big league club at some point this year, just like DeLauder and Brito, too. I think all those three guys were ticketed to help this club, but they all got hurt. And Bezzana, you know, just, you know, with the two, with the oblique, the right and the left oblique. And, you know, he's kind of suffered in comparison to Kurtz, you know, who is having a monster season.
I want to believe, you know, and it's just so weird how streaky this team has been. You go back to what, September 5th, they've only lost one game. I mean, that's, and two games since September 3rd. Is that right, man? I'm just hoping that the streak keeps going forward. What do they need to do against Detroit to be able to take down the Tigers here in this series?
Well, you know, Andy, Detroit has the series lead 4-3, but they've only outscored them by one run, 21-20. So that's how close these games have been. You know, they're going to have to hit. They're going to have to hit. There's Detroit starting.
So you're saying we need to pray. We need to start praying.
Okay. Right. They've got to hit Skubal, which they haven't done. They haven't laid a glove on Skubal all year. He's got 16 innings. They haven't scored a run against him in two starts. You know, Mize, I think they've scored one or two runs against him in 12 innings. And Flaherty, they beat Flaherty earlier in the year, but this guy has owned him last, you know, 2024. In four starts, he had like a 1.04 ERA against them. So, the Tigers lined up their rotation for this series for one purpose, to, kind of end the Guardians' season.
Paul Hoynes joining us, plaindealercleveland.com. Hoynesy, just before you joined us, Andy and Dan and I kind of threw out some thoughts about next year and looking at the position players. And I had six guys that I thought I would think they would want to bring back and who could actually be key guys for them next year, which means about half of them, I if they move on from them, okay. Andy had about the same number, so did Dan. Does this organization ever make that kind of a move where they could do that much tinkering, do you think? Could you see them not bringing back half of the guys who are here? Or do you think they're going to do kind of like what they did with right field this year hey, let's bring back John Kenzie and Will Brennan and see what else we can get out there. Because, I mean, clearly they can't score runs. They got to do something. But yeah, I wonder what they do.
Yeah, I don't know, Jeff. That's a great question. I mean, you know, they always go with the theory that, you know, we've got the young, one of the youngest rosters in baseball, you know, if, you know what they and they'll mature over a year. So the guys they got this year will be a year better because they spent a year in the big leagues. You know, I'm not sure that's the right way to go. I think this offense needs some help, and they've got to go outside the organization to find it. I mean, I know it's going to be crowded. You know, if Pisano's healthy, if DeLauder's healthy, you know, Brito's healthy next year. You know, you've got to find spots for them. But they cannot, you know, what they're doing this year is mind-boggling to me. The lowest batting average in the big leagues, and they're still in this thing. You know, and I don't know if that can happen. I don't think that's not the way it's supposed to work. They're 27th in runs scored. They're at the bottom in OPS and slugging percentage and on base percentage. It's just to do what they've done. I mean, you know, if you could add a couple, you know, professional hitters, real free agents, or make a trade for somebody, a legitimate hitter, I think that would really, really help this offense.
Hoynsey, I know you like Gabe Arias. I love his arm. There are times he looks like the real deal. If Bazana's going to get here next year and play second base, that means Rocchio is going to play somewhere. Do you think Rocchio is better suited long-term than Arias to be the shortstop, or is it neither one of those guys?
Boy, that's a great question. I think Rocchio is a pure shortstop. I think that's where he belongs. That's where he should probably stay. If he's going to hit like he's hit in the second half since he's come back, I think he's definitely the shortstop. I love Arias, but, you know, like you said, great arm. And, you know, this has been one of his – maybe his best season so far, but he's still hitting .230.
Yeah.
You know, and there's times when, you know, he just swings and misses so much at the plate, but – he has gotten better, and he can play shortstop. So I guess you can never have too many shortstops, but you know, I think when it all shakes out, Bazana's going to be at second and Rocchio will probably be at short.
All right. It was interesting that you said Detroit lined up their pitching rotation for the Guardians right here. So I was thinking, if the Guardians get to the end of the season against Texas, because I'm just looking ahead at the rotation, they don't have anybody labeled there yet. And I do think it would be Messick, Ciccone, Cantillo to end out the season. If you had to throw three pitchers at Texas to make the playoffs, one, would you do it? Because if you won, you'd be going to the playoffs. Two, who would it be?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Andy, the thing is, they're going to have to win as many games as they can just to get to those three games.
Right.
And you're going to have to use your best pitchers to get there. So you may have no choice on who you throw in those three games. But, you know, in a perfect world, I'd go with Bibee, Gavin Williams, and Ciccone.
I'm with you. I love what Ciccone's done this year. I think, especially when he started off the year a little bit injured, and then it made me feel a lot better about the trade, I can tell you that.
Hoynsey, yeah, I mean, he saved that trade.
Yeah, he did.
Hoynsey, I know the team loves David Fry, and we know he's coming back from the injury and couldn't play a position this year, and yet he's been DHing and hitting in the 170s. What's David's spot on this team next year, if there is one?
I think he's on the ball club, Jeff. You know, Vogt loves him, and when he was healthy in the first half of 2024, you know, he really kind of, you know, save that club.
Sure,
I thought,
did.
You know, he could bounce around. He was playing right field. He was playing first base. And then, you know, you can make moves with him and put him behind the plate. If he can come back to that kind of player, I think, you know, he's definitely on the club. I think he'll play a big part on the club. But he's got to be healthy because he's got power. We've seen that even in the limited, you know, at-bats that he's had this since he's come back from the Tommy John surgery.
Lindsay, I'm tormented right now because I absolutely love watching teams try to build a team. So I can't wait for the offseason to get here. But this thing might last longer than we think it is. So I'm wishing them luck, and we'll see what they do in the next 13 games. Enjoy the series in Detroit. We'll read you in the Plain Dealer, and your Baseball Talk podcast, Paul Hoynes, Joe Noga. Go listen to it. It's a lot of fun.
And if they don't sweep, don't come home. I'm just telling you.
Okay.
Stay there. Stay in Detroit.
Yeah, I'm going to sell my car and live in Detroit.
Get Hoynesy, yourself thanks, a van. Hoynesy, right, living boys, down we'll by the river. Ya. Awesome.
Paul Hoynes on his way to the Motor City. Greatest, joining us on the Fan Hotline.
Greatest laugh in broadcasting right there.
To talk all things Gardo's. The Locked On Guardians host, Justin Latta, joins us now on the Fan Hotline. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Just busy around here doing a little bit of housework, you know, getting some sweeping done.
I like that. I like that very much because the Guardians swept the Tigers. I understand the joke.
So how we feel laughing. About that? Appreciate it.
Yeah, Justin, I was like, maybe you need to get a Roomba, but that's here nor there.
So I guess we'll get to the sweep. I don't know. I mean, let's see. FanGraphs has updated their playoff percentage for the Guardians to 26%. Where does the Locked On Guardians percentage stand?
I'm going to say 50%. I'm going to put it all up to 50%. Not the division, but just making the playoffs. I'm going to give them a 50% chance. I think they got to stay hot over the next week, which is a lot harder to do considering they've been hot, but I think it's 50-50. I think it's a coin flip for them to get in the playoffs at this point.
What would your response be to every national pundit that's just going to bring up the run differential being bad?
I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean run differential? I don't know how they get this done. No. Sometimes it just matters when you get hot. That's what we were saying the other day. It's like, I don't know how good this team is. Like, you look at the lineup every day and you're like, how do they keep winning games? Because the lineup doesn't really inspire a confidence in a team that's going to score enough runs to win. But the pitching has been unbelievable, and they're just hot at the right time. The only question is going to be if they can stay hot long enough to get in. It just matters when you're good.
How big was it for Tanner Bibee, who's been so up and down this year, to go out there and hold his own with Tarek Skubal?
That's really big. I mean, it obviously started last week, right, with the complete game shutout. I think that gave him a ton of confidence. I think he's been gaining confidence the last couple of starts. That start in Tampa Bay was all right. I think he's been moving in the right direction for a while now and just getting things settled. But, yeah, I think the complete game last weekend, I think, was a big deal. And then, obviously, today you go out there, and I don't think anyone's going to sit here and say that he's better than Tarek Skubal, but I think the only guy that's better than Tarek Skubal is Paul Skenes. But he went out there and matched him pitch for pitch, out for out. And if you can do that against Tarek Skubal and the Tigers, I think you can do it against anybody.
Yeah, the starters and the bullpen have really just kind of shined through this little stretch here. And I almost wonder if this has now become what the Guardians' identity has to be, because the offense just isn't there, but it doesn't really seem like it matters.
No, I had said a couple weeks ago, I forgot. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people wrote them off after the 10-game losing streak and then the 1-9 stretch and then the non-disciplinary discipline of the two pitchers that will not be named. But, yeah, if they had any chance to get back into this race to make things serious for this season, I think that was heading into the trade deadline. And I said the only way they're going to do it is if the pitching steps up. They're going to have to win a lot of 3-2 and 2-1 games, and that's who they've become. They've become a team where they can score two or three or four runs. Four has always been their magic number, I think, probably for 10 years now, and that's the magic number for most teams. But, yeah, if they can score two or three runs, this pitching staff unbelievably has been good enough to make it hold up, and that's what they're going to have to do over the next, 10 games left.
Justin, you mentioned 10 games left. We had this conversation earlier. How many do you have to win? Like, conservatively, what's the win-to-loss ratio that you have to achieve in the next 10 games to safely secure a wild card spot of the division?
When they got to 12 this week, I think we said 9-3 was probably the spot they had to get to. And that included probably losing to Tarek Skubal. And that included maybe a loss next week to Detroit. And that included maybe a loss between the Minnesota series and the Texas series, depending on when that falls. Now that there's 10 games left, I don't know if 7-3 gets it done, because other teams have just not. I mean, Boston lost today, right? And, you know, Houston and Seattle are going back and forth. Maybe 7-3 works because you're playing the Tigers, so you control your own destiny there, kind of. And the Mariners and Astros could beat each other up, and that could help you out a lot. So I would say 7-3, but probably 8-2.
So obviously, if they end up winning the division, A.J. Hinch would be taken out of the equation then for manager of the year, because that's just a disastrous free fall, even though he's at the top of the leaderboard for a lot of people right now. John Schneider's still there for the Blue Jays. Dan Wilson's still there for the Mariners. It's not crazy to think Vogt could win back-to-back. Do you feel like it's on the board if the Guardians erase this deficit?
Right. I mean, if you're asking logically, sure. But the whole thing about the manager of the year is just so goofy, because I don't think anybody really ever thinks about this award logically, because it's always the manager who comes in with the least amount of expectations, right? Like 2013, it was Tito, because the Guardians or the Indians at the time had just come off one of the worst seasons they've had since the early 90s. And last year, nobody knew what Steven Vogt could do, and nobody thought they'd win the division. So it's always going to a manager that comes into the year and everybody doesn't expect to be good. The Tigers and the Guardians both should have been expected to be good this year. I mean, they both made the playoffs. They played a great ALDS last year. So logically, neither of those guys, I think you're right. I think it's John Schneider, even though the Blue Jays were expected to be good, but I don't know who it's going to be. I really don't know. Maybe it'll be on a Bing. Who is it in Seattle? Dan Wilson, the catcher. It might be him. I don't know. Steven Vogt deserves it, though. Let me tell you that. Just the way this season has gone, all the ups and downs, I think there's a very good case to be made.
Justin, I don't want to look too far ahead, because you still got some road to hoe here to actually clinch a playoff spot. But given how dominant this rotation's been, who starts game one of a three-game series?
Well, I guess that depends how things line up. I'm trying to think here. Tanner Bivey and Gavin Williams, because they got moved up to Wednesday and Thursday this week, instead of waiting till an extra day on that six-man rotation like they have been doing, they'll both get to start, I think, two more times down the stretch. They'll face Detroit next week, and then one of them might pitch in the Rangers series. So it's really going to depend on who's available, but I don't think you can go wrong with Gavin or Tanner in game one. I think it has to be one of them. I think you have to have one of them. I mean, I don't think you want to be throwing Slade Ciccone or Parker Messick game one of a playoff series, but if you have one of those two guys going game one, if things line up that way, I think you'll be in good shape.
I think for the casual Guardians fan, they tune in and then they see a Cade Smith blown save, or they see a Hunter Gaddis implosion or something along those lines. And I think it's really hard to explain how they've been, from a statistical standpoint, not only one of the best bullpens in baseball, but legitimately best FIP in the whole stretch of September into August. Like, how do you explain how this bullpen, even though they've had some highlighted moments that stink, really have come together?
I don't know, because they're incredibly thin. If you go back to April, I think we all knew that this bullpen wasn't going to be as good as it was a year ago, because it was historically good, and it's very hard to repeat that, especially when you go into the postseason and pitch deep the way they did and relied on their bullpen. And they tried to add, they added Paul Sewald, didn't work out. Junis has been pretty good outside of 1 month. It's just been a lot of guys stepping up. I mean, they lost, their closer, their Hall of Fame track closer, and Cade Smith has to go into the closer's role. Hunter Gaddis, hadn't been as good as he was a year ago. Colby Allard, I mean, he pitched an incredible inning today. Tim Herron was out of the equation halfway through the year because he couldn't throw strikes, and he probably threw three of the biggest innings this week in Detroit. It's, Eric Sobrowski missed most of the year. He came back late. They don't have Andrew Walters. Nick Enright, who looked like he was going to be a guy who was a key cog in that bullpen, he's now hurt, unfortunately. So I really don't know how to tell. I mean, it's Cade's Matt Festa. I mean, nobody knew who Matt Festa was in April when the Guardians traded cash for him. It's just been a lot of guys stepping up, and this has probably been a better bullpen this year than last year, not based on stats, but based on personnel that had to do the things they're doing.
Justin, obviously we're all excited. We all hope they make the playoffs from here. But if the Guardians, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, how do we define the season?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, they certainly went through a lot of learning lessons, right? I mean, you had your ace, the guy who signed the long-term contract, had to go through a bumpy season. Gavin Williams, I think he's blossomed into a top-of-the-rotation starter that we all hoped he would be. Offensively, unfortunately, they just didn't really do a whole lot. Like, you got Kyle Manzardo, who stepped up in a big way, I think, this year. And, you got C.J. Cephas to the big leagues, even though had other people been healthy, he probably would have been left behind for other guys. That's the hard thing, is, like, you really didn't develop anybody offensively because you didn't have the chance to, right? Because Brito was hurt, DeLauder's hurt, Bazana got hurt. All three of those guys should have been contributing this year. Bonator's had a good September, but offensively it's been a struggle for him. Like, your offensive wins are Kyle Manzardo and CJ Kafis and Jose Ramirez is Jose Ramirez. I think it's the starting pitching. I think moving into next year, you feel confident about all your pitching options. You got Tanner and Gavin and Slade and Parker Messick and Logan Allen and Cal Steven. You know, you have Joey Cantillo, who we haven't even mentioned. I think you feel at least like you have a really strong pitching factory once again heading into 2026 if they don't make the playoffs this year.
Justin, great stuff, buddy. I'm sure it's a big day for you guys on the Locked On Guardians podcast. You guys do so darn good. We appreciate you.
Oh, we appreciate you guys, too. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much. Justin Latta there on the Fan Hotline. We'll react to what he had to say. And a discrepancy noted for NFL head coaches in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.